call to order the Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection. Colleagues, today is February 22nd, 2012, and we are convened for the purposes of a possible, well, a work session on House Bill 4150A, a House Bill 4108A, House Bill 4089A, and House Bill 4111A. And we are still waiting for quorum, so what I will do is at least get the testimony in of the representatives and senators who are here to testify on their particular bills. So that being said, and then once we get done with that, when we do get a quorum, just so you know the order that we will be going in, I think we will do 4089A first, then go to 4150 and 4108, and then to 4111. So that being said, I will open a public hearing on 4108A. Representative Nathanson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from House District 13. I'm bringing this bill to you based on a communication that I got from a constituent last year. She was a victim of a home burglary that involved the theft of heirloom jewelry that had sentimental value. She suspected it was stolen for quick cash. She said, "What can we do about this?" I started talking to law enforcement, and I thought that there was something we could do. I talked extensively, actually, with law enforcement in Eugene and Portland about theft and the typical means of getting, for thieves, to get cash for stolen merchandise. I enjoyed learning from and working with businesses also, small businesses, about how this comes to be, and businesses that inadvertently purchase stolen material. Businesses can be just as much victims of this crime as the individuals from whom the property was stolen. What we all recognized, law enforcement and business that I worked with, is that there are holes in the regulations and we needed to plug those loopholes. This bill simply makes a baseline statewide standard for everybody, so it creates a level playing field for business, and it is going to crack down on some of this easy theft and sale. Law enforcement is eager to catch the bad guys and locate and return the stolen property to the victims. They're trying to use a regional approach, but it's really hard to use a regional approach because there's such a piecemeal method of regulating in Oregon. There are local communities, some local communities, who have adopted some local ordinances. For example, 4 counties and 7 cities. But if you're a criminal, all you do is you learn which of those 4 counties or 7 cities have regulations. You just drive a few miles down the road and sell it somewhere else. Business owners also don't appreciate the competition from people who are not operating in an above-board manner and not operating according to really what they know would be legal. There are a number of other states who've adopted similar requirements to what's being proposed here. 16 states, Alabama, Arkansas, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Maryland, Michigan, Mississippi, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, North Carolina, South Carolina, Texas, Virginia, and Washington. So we're not leading the pack here.
Could you repeat that?
You betcha. I will. The objectives of this bill are to reduce property crime associated with the theft of gold and precious materials and to provide a way for law enforcement officers and victims to identify and recover the stolen goods. So some initial assumptions that we all agreed to. By the way, the work group meetings were really very interesting when business and law enforcement and legislative council and I could come together and discuss what's going to work, what's not going to work. We were committed to do the best we could to have the most value in a statute, but not overreach and try to cover everything that might happen, every last different permutation of what a criminal might try to be involved in. So we did all agree that the value of gold and other precious materials is skyrocketing. That's driving some of this. Not regulating all of the brick-and-mortar stores and not regulating the transient sales is unfair to those who are operating under pretty strict regulation, which specifically would be pawn shops. Identification of the seller and recording the transaction are more important than actually prohibiting the same-day cash. Transient buyers that set up events at venues such as the hotel or the fairgrounds are rarely asking for identification and recording transactions. And uniform basic statewide rules would be the best thing that we could do. So this bill requires anyone doing a business in Oregon to meet the requirements, so it's going to cover those fast-blooming trade shows. In the Sunday Oregonian, just this past Sunday, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'm going to point out that I have a newspaper with me that shows full-page ads on pages 7, 8, and 9, and also pages 14 and 15 for these transient trade shows where they promise top dollar for your gold and other precious materials. And basically, it's no questions asked. In response to a number of people going over this proposed statute with a fine-tooth comb, we prepared amendments. So the version that you're seeing from the House has been amended to make sure that anyone already covered by regulation, including scrap metal dealers, auto parts, even internet sales, anything that would already be covered by other state or federal laws is excluded. We don't want to step on toes or make complications or over-regulate those who are already regulated. I have a quote from the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police. Quote, "It will provide the means for law enforcement to track down stolen items, return them to the owner, and quickly identify the seller." From Detective Chris Vream in Eugene, Oregon, quote, "If there's just one thing you do this session, make sure you pass that bill. Right now we have people stealing jewelry in Lane County and going right down to Roseburg in Douglas County because they have different laws and we can't track it." And then finally, from the State Sheriff's Association, President Larry Blanton, and who's also Deschutes County Sheriff, "We support House Bill 4108 because it gives law enforcement a new tool for our toolbox for fighting property crimes." Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson. We appreciate you bringing this forward. I will get back to this in just a moment. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4108A, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 4089A. Representative Edwards. And did I say Representative?
Yes, Senator.
Senator Edwards.
Whatever. Well, on one vote. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Edwards. I'm State Senator from North Eugene and Junction City. I'm here to testify in favor of, and I present to you, House Bill 4089. It is a consensus product. It is, it applies only to properties inside of the UGB of Eugene. It is not a statewide bill. I will put to rest any rumors right now that may be going around that I want to stuff contents from 4090 into this bill. That's not happening here today. I'm not here to propose that. So if anybody's getting all excited watching this, you can just be assured that that's not what we're here about today. House Bill 4089 is to deal specifically with an issue that we have inside the Eugene UGB. When the Boundary Commission was abolished, the Lane County Boundary Commission, the only one of its kind in the 2007 session, it left people without a mechanism for which by which they could request annexation into the city of Eugene. Now, I've been very clear and consistent that I disagree with the policy that I call hostage annexation, whereby a city can say, we will not issue a building permit or you know, something like a building permit unless you request annexation into our city. And through an agreement with the county has ceded that authority to issue building permits and the like to the city within the UGB. I've fairly consistently disagreed with that policy and have consistently sponsored legislation to ban that practice. However, I'm also a pragmatist and recognize politically that until lightning strikes in this legislature and we're able to pass such a bill, people in my district are left without a means to develop their property if they want to. And so while there are a lot of trust issues in my neighborhood in Santa Clara and just south of me in the River Road neighborhood, there are a lot of trust issues between unincorporated residents and the city. We are trying to move forward in a cooperative way to come up with a pilot program that would be voluntary and that would allow the city of that would give the city of Eugene an ability to develop some incentives, if you will, to residents, unincorporated residents, to incorporate into the city voluntarily. And then there would be sideboards around that on as to how many properties it could apply to and how long the window of time would be. And so we can give the opportunity for the special districts in the area to see if it's working for them. And I will note that they, districts like the River Road Parks District in the area are in the process of negotiating a 190 agreement. Services agreement with the city of Eugene, which I have insisted that the city, if we're going to move forward with a ramped up program, that the city is able to come to some sort of an agreement with them. And so I think you'll have, I hope that you'll have testimony from special districts who's in the room as to their neutrality to the bill, testimony from the city of Eugene as to their support of the bill, and very briefly, the bill, the sideboards that have been put on the bill would allow property owners, that would allow this opportunity to apply to property owners that are within 200 feet of the city of Eugene currently and owned, and those property owners that owned their property prior to 1973, of course, 1973 being the session that they back then passed Senate Bill 100, which kind of set in motion our whole land use system that we have here today. The opportunity to take advantage of this pilot program would sunset at the end of this year, so it's a really small window of time for the city of Eugene to demonstrate good faith in their negotiations with the Parks District and in negotiations with property owners that may wish to take advantage of this opportunity.
Great. Thank you, Senator Edwards. Any questions? All right. I think what I'm going to do is, since we're in a public hearing for 4089A, I think we're just going to stay there. If I can beg your indulgence for just a moment, Representative Widener, and we'll get the hopefully brief testimony from call up Brenda Wilson, Mark Landauer, and Bob Blackmore.
Mr. Chair, we missed an opportunity. If Senator Georgian had gone down with Senator Edwards, we probably got the lightning bolt.
I was thinking that.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Senator Shields, members of the committee. My name is Brenda Wilson. I'm here today representing the city of Eugene. You should have before you my written testimony, so I'll keep this very brief. The city of Eugene strongly supports House Bill 4089A. We believe this is a very simple bill. It revives a tool that the city of Eugene had prior to the Lane County Boundary Commission being dissolved in 2007. We have an area that is northwest of our city where where we had special tools that we used with property owners to deal with development out there. These property owners, especially the ones who have owned their property for a long period of time, were used to living under those sets of rules. Those rules went away in 2007. As Senator Edwards noted, the city of Eugene is in discussions with the stakeholders of that area to work out a solution that works for everyone on how to deal with development in that area. In the meantime, this would provide a tool to help some landowners that are stuck between the dissolving of the Boundary Commission and what we will eventually come up with. This would allow us to help these landowners out. We urge your support of this bill, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Mr. Landauer.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Shields, members of the committee, Mark Landauer with the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I'd like to thank Senator Edwards and Ms. Wilson for working with SDAO to narrow the scope of this legislation. This is a difficult issue for the districts in Santa Clara and River Road. They are much beloved districts to their constituents, and Senator Edwards did describe to you some of the mistrust that has been created over the years. SDAO is neutral on the bill for a variety of reasons, but we believe, generally speaking, that had an urban services agreement been in place under ORS 195, many of the contentious issues that arise between local governments would largely dissipate or dissolve. We are currently engaged in an urban services discussion with Lane County and the City of Eugene between River Road and Santa Clara. That discussion has just begun. As an act of good faith to move that process along, we are neutral on the bill because of its short time period. However, we would like to just say for the record that this is a one-time shot for those property owners from the River Road and Santa Clara districts' perspective, and we would like to just say that on the record. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Oh, I appreciate that. Is there anybody else who's interested in testifying on 4089A? Thank you, Matt. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4089A and open a work session on House Bill 4089A. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4089A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 4089A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? O'Donnell, will you please call the roll?
Senator Boquist.
Aye.
Senator Dingfeld.
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. And Senator Dingfelder, would you carry this bill?
Sure.
Or actually, why don't we let Senator Edwards carry it?
Sure.
Senator Edwards will be the carrier on House Bill 4089A, and I will close the work session on House Bill 4089A and open a public hearing on House Bill 4111A. Representative Widener, welcome to the committee. Sure.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, State Representative Jim Widener from House District 24, which incorporates most of Yamhill County, a little bit of Polk County, and if I come back here again, it'll be over to Hillsborough High School, which makes no sense to me. So, but that was our nonpartisan redrawing of lines. So, with that being said, for the record, and I've stated that many times on the record before, I bring to you a very, very good bill, which was a problem that we had in the law. This is House Bill 4111. Essentially, it deals with liens put on property because of local improvements. This is where a city or a county might go in and put in a new sidewalk, new sewer lines in front of your house, and you're unable to pay the lien that they put on your property after they've done the improvements that you may not have even wanted. And they'll place a lien of, say, I'll take an example out of Eugene where they put a lien on a senior citizen's property for $7,000. He could not afford it. He was on Social Security, owned his property free and clear. They foreclosed on the property because he could not pay the lien, sold his property for $7,000. And that's the statute that we're trying to fix in this language, where they have to sell it for the fair, well, the tax appraised value, 80% of the tax appraised value. And at that point, they have to send it out and get people there to bid on this property at auction. So this gentleman's house sold for $7,000, and he was put on basically the streets, or probably went to social services, and we were paying for him in a rest home because of city government going in and foreclosing on his property and not being able to sell it for more than what the lien was. So in essence, to keep it simple, that's what this bill is about. It's about protecting people. People that are probably land rich, cash poor, is, would be one way to put it. But I would say this is a bill to protect our seniors. I don't see it coming to play into the banking industry or somebody who has a loan so much, because lots of times the banks will come in and they will buy off the lien so they don't lose the property for the lien, and that's how the banks will protect themselves. So they'll pay the $7,000, take it, and then they will start the foreclosure process themselves if they're carrying a note on it. And I think that's what tends to happen on that side. So with that, I also have David Honeycutt here with me, who has a little more information and probably could share the story exactly what transpired on the Eugene situation for your information. The other thing that we do have in here is some cleanup language for county clerks. We were kind enough to address that form under the assumption that this was not going to hang up this bill at all whatsoever, and it has not. As you could tell, it came out of the House unanimous. So,
Dave, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Shields, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, in support of 4111. The guts of our portion of the bill can be found in Section 3. It's ORS 223525 that's caused the trouble, and that's the section which we're amending under the current law, under that current provision. If a city forecloses on a lien for a local improvement, a street, a sidewalk, sewer, water, some type of improvement, an LID, a local improvement district is formed, the area is mapped, the project is undertaken, the costs are incurred, and then each of the property owners in that district are assessed a portion of those total project costs. If the property owner, who may or may not have wanted to be within the LID in the first place, is assessed that their share and cannot pay that assessment, then under the current law, the city has the authority to foreclose on that lien, but at the sale, at the foreclosure sale, the city is banned from accepting a bid that exceeds the amount of the lien. So even if there are 10 bidders there that want to engage in some type of bidding war over the for the property, the city can't accept a bid that exceeds the amount of the lien. And the example that Representative Widener talked about was the one that really spurred this legislation. The brother and sister who owned their property in Eugene, they were on Social Security, but they had owned their home for decades, so it was free and clear. The city did some sewer improvements, assessed a $7,000 assessment on this elderly brother and sister. They couldn't pay the $7,000. They were on Social Security. They couldn't afford the $7,000. So the city foreclosed on the lien, and the city, and this isn't the city of Eugene problem. The statute said that the city couldn't accept more than the amount of the lien at the foreclosure sale. So somebody that was paying attention came in and bid $7,000 on the property, took the property, evicted these folks, and then turned around and sold the property, I believe, for $147,000 after the redemption period ended. So That the statute doesn't seem appropriate. We changed what the bill does is it changes that section and requires the city to, at the foreclosure sale, to it prohibits them from accepting a bid that's less than 75% of the assessed value of the property as determined by the tax assessor. So they can't accept a bid for less than 75%. If there is no bid for 75%, then they wait 90 days. days and conduct a sale, and they continue to do that until they either receive a bid of 75% of the assessed value or the property is sold. At the time the property is sold, then the lien is paid off, and any if there are any junior lien holders, they're paid off, and whatever equity is left goes to the property owner. We made amendments to address concerns of the city, and the bill passed out. As Representative Widener said, it passed out unanimously out of committee and 58-0 on the floor. So it's a good bill. I think does a fair bit of equity for property owners that are caught in sometimes in a untenable situation. So I would hope that the committee will move it on and pass the bill.
Okay. Senator Boquist.
I'm just curious because I have another issue relative to this, but the redemption period. It's obviously this event transpired 6-7 years ago.
Oh, and Chair Shields, Senator Boquist, this was actually quite some time ago, I believe. This bill originally came around in the 1990s,
right.
And just died for lack of attention. Mm-hmm. So the fact pattern, the Eugene fact pattern, was quite some time ago. These don't occur very frequently. We don't have too frequent LID lien foreclosures.
Right, just a follow-up comment, because in relationship to some of the activities of this entity and foreclosure issues, so on and so forth, and just for the record, I think Mr. Hunter might be able to confirm this, is that, you know, it's a 3-year period before you foreclose on the house, and then there's actually the redemption period is 3 years, which is why we haven't seen a huge series of foreclosures yet for tax-related, because that redemption period, even though a city or county can foreclose at that 3-year mark, they have to hold it for another 3 years. Whoever bought it or they sold it for 3 years can't get rid of it because you can claim it back for the next 3 years, which I was surprised at, which really tells us that in the economic conditions we face today is we have bank foreclosures that are purely going wrong, but we now are having a large growing number of tax-type foreclosures pending out there that when they hit that mark 3 years, 2 and 3 years from now, we're going to see another sweep of foreclosures, just like the Great Depression, where the vast majority of foreclosures in the Great Depression were not from banks. They were tax foreclosures from the county sheriff.
Mr. Chair,
interesting.
If I may comment on that.
Yes, please.
Senator Boquist, we're going to try to achieve that issue as well, but our relating to clause was too airtight for us. The kind of clause that you like to have on your legislation, but this time I wish it would have been a little broader so we could have got that in, so we plan on addressing that in the upcoming legislative session. So,
got a couple of other bills over there you might want to send back over to us. All right, thank you, Representative. Appreciate your testimony. Could we please bring up Cleve Abbey, Sean Gillians, and Michael Eisen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sean Gillians, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors in support of House Bill 4111. Thank you for mentioning all the things this bill doesn't relate to. It does not relate to the other bills on the other side. The fix that we sought is in Section 4 of the bill, and it actually undoes an inadvertent addition from last session. You all had a bill that related to construction lien claimants and notice they should be provided. It was thought because their addresses weren't recorded for construction lien holders that they weren't getting proper notice on foreclosures, and so you added some provisions. We certainly didn't see any issues with that. Unfortunately, it added two additional words that had to be included on the first page of a recorded document with the county clerks. It added the addresses of, in a typical, let's say, real estate transaction, the borrower and the lender. Those are throughout the document, not necessary on the first page, and it's caused some problems with the county clerks as far as holding up recording requirements. So we quickly came in and asked, please just remove those two words. Has nothing to do with any of those other big foreclosure issues. We'd urge your support. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I'm Cleve Abbey, representing the Oregon Land Title Association here. We And the Title Association also supports this change in Section 4 of the bill. The change has led to a lack of uniformity between the counties on what addresses have to be on the first page of the document. So in some counties, we face a clerk's office asking for these names, but in other counties, they ask for the addresses of other names. It's also because if you don't have the necessary first page stuff, you can still record, but there's a $20 surcharge. So this has also had the effect of pushing up recording charges a little bit. And there are some concerns about privacy because some people may not wish to have their addresses on a recorded document. And this essentially penalizes them because of the recording surcharge. So restoring the law to what it was before is something we support because of these very practical reasons and impacts on our practices and the costs to our customers. Thank you.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, Mike Elias and Association of Oregon Counties. Just want to quickly say that our association supports House Bill 4111, both the underlying piece with the local improvement district liens, foreclosing on LID liens. There was the original language was probably okay from our perspective, but was improved even more over on the House side. We thank Representative Widener, Mr. Honeycutt for that. But as it is now, it's a pretty rare situation. This probably is, well, this definitely is an improvement to the statute, so we support that. As for Section 4, we definitely support that. I think it's a classic case of sort of what this February session was intended for in some respects, to fix an unintended consequence from the prior session. I mean, even the bill, Senate Bill 382, had a relating to construction lien notices relating clause at the time. And you know, I think in an abundance of overcaution, somebody decided to add it into a different statute that basically pertained to all documents that were being recorded. Has led to some sort of uneven application around the state, and this is probably the perfect easy solution, is to just go back to how the law was intended. Still applies to construction liens, but not to all other documents. So we support the change.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions for this panel? Scott Winkles.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities. I just wanted to add our support to the bill. I'd like to thank Representative Widener for working with us to address the original concerns that came out as drafted, and we think this is a very equitable bill to address a clear problem, shortcoming in the lien statute.
Well said. Questions? All right. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4111A and open a work session on House Bill 4111A. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4111A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 4111A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? O'Donnell, will you please call the roll?
Senator Boquist.
Aye.
Senator Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye, and I think this was Senator Przanski's bill, so I will ask him to be the carrier, Senator Przanski, carrier on House Bill 4111A. I'll close the work session on House Bill 4111A and get Representative Nathanson on her way. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 4108A because I think there were still some people that wanted to testify. Could we please bring up Paul Romaine, Brenda Wilson, and anyone else who wants to testify?
Josh Oller.
Oh, and Josh. I'm sorry, Josh. Josh Oller?
Oller.
Oller. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Good morning again, Senator Shields, members of the committee. Again, Brenda Wilson with the City of Eugene. The City of Eugene strongly supports House Bill 4108A. We'd like to thank Representative Nathanson for allowing us to serve on the work group and for listening to the concerns of our police. You should have a letter before you from one of our police detectives who participated on the work group. Representative Nathanson listened to the comments from law enforcement to make sure that the bill that is before you for your consideration works for law enforcement. We believe that it's a good bill, that it will help law enforcement locate, identify, and recover stolen property. And we really appreciate you taking testimony, and we urge your support. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I represent the Oregon Pawnbrokers Association. With me here on my left is Josh Oler, who is the principal involved in Silver Lining pawn shop in Portland. I believe they're the largest in the state. To answer any questions and give you a little bit of testimony. A couple of things. First of all, the person who deserves the praise on this is Representative Nathanson. She did what most of us thought was impossible, because we kept warning her it's impossible to do this in a short session. But during the interim, she got people together from all the interest groups and put us in a room and said, we need to work something out. There is a real problem out there. Let's work it out. And we did. Actually came up with a wonderful bill. Had to be amended a little bit, because there's always these slight tweaks. We kind of wish there was an emergency clause on it so it would go into effect immediately, but we understand time constraints, so we're not going to push for that. But she worked to put us all together and came up with a bill that we believe will really get at a source of a problem out there, which is the disposal of stolen goods. And with that, I'll let Mr. Oler talk a little bit about the issue involved.
Senator Shields, member of the committee. My name is Josh Oler. I represent Silver Lining Jewelry and Loan Company, along with the Oregon Pawnbrokers Association. I did want to also thank Representative Nathanson for addressing this issue. I do want to let you know this is not just an Oregon issue. This is a national issue. I'm also involved with the National Pawnbrokers Association. And as she mentioned, state to state, these road shows or traveling gold buyers move around, picking up a lot of merchandise. Most of it, in my belief, is probably stolen merchandise, because they don't require any identification, or they have very minimal descriptions when they do report to the police departments. We, as a business, do encourage competition. I just want to put that forward. This isn't a bill about eliminating competition. I think it makes me be a better businessman, but I do want a level playing field. We feel that we're actually penalized for running a brick-and-mortar business here in the state of Oregon, where these traveling road shows can move around and pick up the same merchandise and more that allows thieves an avenue to actually liquidate this stuff anonymously. I actually went to one of these road shows last summer to see what they did pay for their stuff. They claim that they pay the highest. I understand you can't make a law that prevents ignorance from people. But what I did find out, which is more important, and I did relate that to the Portland Police Department, was when one of these shows did move into the city of Portland, and the city of Portland is, because of our city statutes, do have laws already put in place that require people to upload the data that they take in, record the merchandise, and the identification of the person selling the merchandise. When I walked into one of these shows, that didn't happen. They attempted to do it, but got so frustrated with the computer systems that they just opted not to. More importantly, is even if you were to record the seller's information and a detailed description of what the item is, their description of the item that I brought in, which was a lady's diamond solitaire wedding set, their description was yellow gold diamond ring. Where an accurate description, and not a perfect one, would be a lady's yellow gold diamond, center stone, approx 0.20 CT for carat with six side diamonds. And there's no accurate way that any detective could identify that. Not to mention the cost of those ads that Representative Nathanson showed you, I also went forward and said, well, maybe I'll make my own ad out there. It says that we do pay top dollar on stuff. When I contacted the Oregonian, the quote I got for a regional ad in their papers was just under $10,000 per page. So you can understand the kind of stuff that they're bringing into their store. You know, with that, you know, we do encourage this bill. We think it's a great bill, and I appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you very much for coming down to testify. We appreciate it. Senator George.
I just kind of want to appreciate your comments about the competition, because we obviously don't want to create barriers to entry. So I see a list of kind of requirements, including a physical description of the seller. And is this similar to what you guys do in the pawnbrokers? It's basically the same. It's a level playing field with the requirements that apply to these folks here.
Senator George, members of the committee, it's exactly what it's kind of based off of. Pawnbrokers are a heavily, heavily regulated industry. We want nothing to do with stolen merchandise. I've had stuff stolen myself. In fact, we have a very low percentage of things that come into our store that are stolen simply because of our recording requirements that the people, if they were to bring something into my store, they're going to get caught and they're going to jail. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And the stuff does get back to the rightful owners. So it's to answer your question, yes, this is very similar to what we record already on our documents.
Good question. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Anybody else would like to testify on this bill? All right. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4108A and open a work session on House Bill 4108A. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4108A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 4108A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Boquist.
Just a comment for the record. This and appreciate Representative Nathanson bringing this forward, because this really brings this particular segment of the metal industry into the rest of the metal industry that Senator Dingfelter and I went through in two sessions on judiciary trying to get to do the same thing, which we successfully did.
I was going to say, I whispered to him, it's just like metal theft.
Yeah, we've done this all over, and appreciate Representative Nathanson bringing this forward and getting everybody in the same kind of music.
And actually, Mr. Chair, I was going to add that there's a new activity going on in my district and probably your district too, where there's a stealing of car parts and then selling to body shops. And I'm starting to think that if we need to do that for car parts as well, because frankly, I think there's definitely some issues going on with that. But that's for another time.
All right. Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, we are in work session. And Donald, could you please call the roll?
Senator Boquist.
Yes.
Senator Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. And let's see. So Senator George, would you be willing to, or Senator Boquist, would you
like to carry? I carried the metal theft last time.
Okay. Senator Boquist will be the carrier on House Bill 4108A, and I will close the work session on House Bill 4108A and open a work session on House Bill 4150A. Jan, could you tee it up for us?
I will. Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 4111A was heard by the committee earlier this week, and this is the bill that expands the definition of a qualified business that's going to be eligible for participating in the credit guarantees, credit enhancement fund. It's going to include non-traded sector businesses for a temporary period that's going to end July 1st, 2015. Declares an emergency effective on passage. And we have the -3 amendment before you that clarifies the definition of businesses that are located in distressed areas are eligible during the temporary period as well as after the temporary period ends. And there is no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact, but no statement issued.
Okay, so it's ready to go?
It is.
Senator George, do you want to make a motion on the amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopt
Dash three
amendments to House Bill 4150.
Senator George has moved the Dash 3 amendment into House Bill 4150A. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4150 as amended by the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 4150A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator George.
Committee, I'm going to vote for yes on the bill, but I'm having growing concerns about all of these incentive programs that we're creating all over the place, and there doesn't seem to be any consistent pattern of why we're doing it. And I'm really concerned that what we're getting into is just a lot of corporate welfare, and I hope this isn't another one. But I've been very, very concerned that there doesn't seem to be any overall economic policy for this state. I'll support the bill, but I'll probably say the same thing on the floor. We need to kind of come up with, when we come up with loan guarantee programs, incentive programs, and economic development programs, that somehow there's some consistent pattern to these things rather than just punching a whole bunch of holes on who can take advantage of certain loopholes. So anyway, I just raised a concern for all of us as we go forward on these things.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate your comments on that topic. Let's see. Any further discussion? Adonna Lee, please call the roll.
Senator Boquist.
Aye.
Senator Dienfelder.
Aye.
Senator Rosenbaum.
Excused.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye. And why don't we see if Senator Mona Sanderson would like to carry that, since she was one of the co-sponsors. Senator Mona Sanderson will be the carrier of House Bill 4150A. And I will close the work session on House Bill 4150A. And we.
What's the future plan? Are we meeting next week? Are we?
We have
a call or
informational hearing.
Informational hearing on Monday.
Okay.
The agenda is not out, but it's been approved to have a hearing on the issue of the A&E.
I'm just looking
contracts.
For my schedule. Next Monday.
Yeah.
We're meeting.
At 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Okay.
On the issue of what?
On the topic of indefinite quantity contracts and potentially the unemployment insurance, but we're still working on getting that approved. 9 o'clock on Monday. We're adjourned.